This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Welcome to episode number 10 of the Beersmith Podcast. We're glad to have you here. Got a great interview with Pat Hollingdale today. We're going to talk about brewing a bag. Before I get to that, though, I wanted to mention one of my websites. If you go to beersmith.com/blog, which is a homebrewing blog, it's actually become a bit of a hub for homebrewing info now. And I got about 140 articles there, plus the podcast you can listen to. I'm going to give you a quick tip. If you go to the top of the website and click on the guide at the very top, you'll get an index of well over 100 homebrewing articles, which are sorted by topic. So that's another great resource to check out as you're browsing the web. And now, without further ado, I'm going to jump into this week's interview on Brewing a Bag. Okay, today on the Beersmith Show, as my guest, I have Patrick Hollingdale from BIABrewer.info, or BeABrewer.info is what he calls it. And Patrick is also coming at us from down under. So welcome, Patrick.
Good morning, Brad. Great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. I'm actually recording this in the evening, and you're, it's 7 a.m. in the morning there, I think, in Perth, Australia.
That's right. So I think we're about 13 hours difference.
13-hour time difference. But thank you for getting up early and doing the show. I really appreciate you coming in. And Pat is one of the experts on what we call brewing a bag. And it's great to have you on the show, Pat. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's always good to be part of, Beersmith's done a lot over the years, and well, congratulations to you on your site and all the work you do. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun with it. It's kind of fun. Now, one of the things that surprised me when I started Beersmith was how many people actually brew down under in Australia. And I didn't know this until I started doing it, but as far as I can tell, Australia is actually the number two country for home brewing behind the United States, at least out of the English-speaking countries. I'd like to ask you, what's really made home brewing catch on in Australia? Why is it so popular in Australia?
Gee, that's quite surprising. We're number two behind America. I'm not too sure if we should be embarrassed about that or proud.
Well, I mean, it's a relatively small country. What's the population of Australia, roughly?
We've got nearly 22 million at the moment.
So 22 million, but I mean, America is obviously 310 million, roughly. But a large number of homebrewers down under. Why do you think that is?
Well, quite surprising. We're a non-drinking country for 40,000 years. And then I think we had the early settlement here was made up of convicts. So I suppose we've always had a bit of a disposition for grog, as the word was, as alcohol was known as in the early days. And I think recently, probably since, 1984 would be a key year for craft brewing in Australia. In 1984, well, we had a population that was quite diverse. We had a lot of a mixture of cultures. And we had a very small range of beers. So it was probably a time where we were actually ready for a change. And in 1984, Coopers brought out the first tins of liquid extract. So before that, if you wanted to brew beer at home, you'd be getting some grain from somewhere, probably getting some baker's yeast, perhaps, or maybe even using a tin of liquid malt. So 1984, Coopers brought out the malt specifically designed for home brewing, plus the yeast. And also in 1984, though, more importantly, here in Western Australia, actually in Perth, we had the Salonanka Pub Brewery open. This was done by a guy called Phil Sexton and a group of his friends. Phil was a professionally trained brewer from overseas, and basically, they came into the market here and took on the brewing giants. At that stage, we had, all the beers were pretty much the same. And Bill and his team came in and bought that pub and started brewing beers on the premises. And this was a bit of a culture shock. In those days, if you bought a beer, there'd be no head on it. So they did some quite clever things by introducing glasses that were 2 ounces bigger, and they'd fill that 2 ounces of beer glass with head. And that was a totally new concept back then, and quite a challenge. I actually worked in 1986 back at the Sail and Anchor. That was a time that you Americans took the cup back from us.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was a big challenge back then, but it actually ended up changing the whole pub culture in Australia.
Yeah, I started brewing in, I think, 1987. And ironically, one of my very first beers was a Cooper Stout extract, yes. Is what I recall.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, excellent. Yeah, this makes good beer, that.
It was not so good, though. I have to say my first experiments in brewing were not the best, but I got better over time, so, you know.
Well, I'm certainly with you there. I gave up brewing 3 times when I was using kits, so I never mastered that art.
So in the 90s, I assume you probably saw a great increase in the availability of craft brews in Australia as well, right?
Oh, yeah, tremendous amount. We've got stuff everywhere these days, every state. So it's certainly very different from 20 years ago.
So the same thing happened here in the States. Obviously, we had this sort of explosion of craft brewing, and I think in the 90s, we also saw sort of an explosion in home brewing as well, largely because the ingredients got much better. That was one thing. And then, of course, the other thing was simply that people, because they got exposed to a wider variety of beers, got interested in producing a lot of different beers.
I suppose, yeah, I've never thought about the malt side of things, but yeah, there must have been tremendous changes actually in just the last 20 years here as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, the ingredients we could get back in the 80s versus what we can get today, particularly yeast and other ingredients, just a vast difference, even the freshness of the hops and many other things. Now, Pat, most people credit Australia with starting the brew-in-a-bag movement. Can you give us a quick history of what brew-in-a-bag actually is and how did it start in Australia?
On the Aussie Homebrewer Forum, a lovely guy, James Squire, he went under the name as, asked a simple question. He said, oh, why can't we brew all in one vessel? And there was quite a lot of interest in it. And I myself at the time, I was living in a one-bedroom apartment on the east coast of Australia, batch sparging. And so, of course, this very much caught my interest. And the traditional brewers jumped in and we discussed it and looked at what the possible problems might be. And then we had another brewer, Andrew Queensland, who's a very experienced brewer. He put his hand up to do a full-volume mash in his esky. And he had no bad reports on that. In fact, later on, he couldn't tell the difference between that beer and his other beers. And so after seeing him do that, I thought, well, I'll give it a crack. And so I did my first brew in a bag. And actually, it was just a lovely way to brew.
So when was this? When was your first batch of brew in a bag?
I think it was about August 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And then James Squire, he had a crack at doing full-volume brewing in an electric urn, so he was the first electric urn brewer, and it all moved on from there.
Interesting. Now brewing a bag obviously is an all-grain method, and it's slightly different than the conventional cooler, you know, mash tun that a lot of us use here in the States. What do you actually need to get started in brewing a bag? What kind of equipment do you use?
Well, a key element of pure BIAB is actually full-volume brewing. So what we're doing is we're looking at adding all the liquor used in a brew, so all the mash and sparging liquor, we're looking at adding that to the kettle straight from the beginning. So the grain actually gets mashed in the entire volume of liquor. Now, the way this is done is basically by using a kettle that will hold that full volume, and we add a bag, so we might call that a soft vessel. We add a bag to the kettle, and then we just add the grain and leave it sit there for 60 or 90 minutes. So what we're doing is what we might call a passive sparge. So we are actually sparging. The sparge is going on at the same time as the mash.
So essentially, I mean, you're just mashing right in the boil. In your boiler, basically, right?
That's right. And so that's how we're getting the brewing in a single vessel. So a better name, but by it could have been single vessel brewing, full volume brewing. I'm not too sure what the right name should be, but they're the key elements, a single vessel using the full amount of liquor.
So you have a brew pot that's say 20 liters or 30 liters, something like that, maybe 36 quarts, and you put this large grain bag in it, right? And you use the grain bag to do your mashing and sparging, right?
That's right. And we'd be looking at probably the electric urn brewers often use a 40 liter urn. Mm-hmm. A 50 liter pot's a very comfortable size to do single batches in. Though you can get away with 40 litres or less. I use a 70-litre pot myself because that enables me to do double batches quite easily, and it's a pretty comfortable-sized pot.
So for the Americans, 20 litres is very close to 5 gallons, roughly. It's about 19 litres is roughly 5 gallons.
Yeah, so we'd be looking at a pot twice that.
Right, exactly. Now, the grain bag's obviously an important piece of equipment. What material do you use for making a grain bag, and how do you go about, creating one?
Okay, well, we use polyester because it's got a high melting point, and obviously it's a very inert material. And it's a very sheer or fine, sheer or fine porosity. So Dan Walker actually described it well. He said it's much finer than a fine screen, but not as fine as muslin cloth. And if you filled it with flour and shook it a bit, you find a little bit of flour had come out, but nothing else. So it's a bit of a vague description. We had another guy, Dick, on biobrewer.info, and he said the material should be about 30 yarns per centimetre, if that's any help to anyone. Actually, making a bag is not difficult. We've got instructions on biobrewer.info how to do that. So it's a pretty easy bit of equipment to make, whether you do it yourself or have a, I'm not too sure what they call them in the US. We call them dry cleaners over here, but they'll usually sew things up for you.
A tailor or a sewing, I guess a tailor or somebody with a sewing machine could easily do it, right?
Yeah.
Now, how big is the bag's obviously sized to fit inside the pot, right? That's a fairly large bag.
It's a large bag, and it should line the pot completely. Basically, we don't want a small bag because it restricts the grain too much. So, yeah, you want your bag to line the pot.
Right, because you want the grain bed to float as it's being mashed, right?
That's right, yeah. I'm noticing now, though, a lot of guys are not, they're actually not agitating their grain through the mash, and they're actually getting quite good results. I don't do that myself, but I intend to try it.
So can you give me a quick overview of the brew-in-a-bag process then? So we start with this grain bag and obviously a large boil tun or large boil vessel. What's the process you actually use to brew your beer?
Okay, well, if I wanted to brew a single batch, let's say I've got my 50-litre pot and I want to get, say, 19 litres of beer to drink at the end of it all. I'm not too sure how much 19 litres is in...
Five gallons. Very close to 5 gallons.
Yep. Okay. So what I'd do is I'd set my pot up. I'd add about 40 litres of water. So we're about
That's almost twice. It's almost, closer to 10 gallons.
10 gallons.
40 litres is closer to 10 gallons.
Okay. So I'd add that to my pot and I'd heat that water up to about 2 degrees higher than what I want my mash temperature to be. Then I add my bag and secure that around the lip of the kettle, pour my grain in, and then I might agitate the grain, let it sit there for 60 minutes, 90 minutes. I prefer to do 90 minutes myself. And at the end of that 90 minutes, you can either pull the bag, give it a quick squeeze and dump it, or you might choose to do a mash out. So raise the temperature up to 78 degrees Celsius and then lift the bag out of the pot, let it drain, give it a bit of a squeeze. And basically then we're just heating the wort up to the boil and the rest of the process is the same as traditional brewing. So it's very easy. It's not a complicated method.
No, it sounds pretty straightforward. You typically are heating the water, though, right? Directly with a flame. You're not using any kind of an infusion or anything like that, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're heating the water initially up to that 2 degrees higher than the mash temperature. We only need to do it 2 degrees higher because we're using the full volume.
So it doesn't cool much because it probably doesn't lose that much temperature over the mash time because of that, right? Do you turn the flame off during the? Off while you're mashing, I assume.
Yes, that's right. And if you want to add some heat during the mash, you can turn your burner on and give the grain a bit of a stir if you want to maintain the temperature. And I've seen guys brewing in the snow, and what they do is wrap their kettle in some sort of insulation, and they're losing about 2 degrees over the course of the mash, which is quite amazing.
Which is kind of the same thing we do with a cooler here, I guess, right? A traditional all-grain setup, you just use a cooler, and the cooler would obviously maintain the temperature over time. But we use an infusion, obviously, instead of heating the water initially. One of the questions I get quite often is whether you really do the full volume mash, the full boil volume, or do you prefer a conventional mash with less water? Typically we mash with about 1.5 quarts per pound, which is roughly 3 liters per kilogram, roughly a little over 3 liters per kilogram. Yep. And obviously with brewing a bag, if you're putting 40 liters or 40 quarts into a 5 gallon batch, you're mashing it probably 3 or 4 times that at least, right?
About twice that actually, but we're doing 7 to 1. So yeah, traditional brewing is usually about 3 to 1. And we'd be doing 6 to 7 to 1, depending on the evaporation rate of your kettle.
So 6 or 7 liters per kilogram, which is, doing the rough math, is roughly 3 to 4 quarts per pound. I'm trying to help the folks here in the States. A lot of listeners here in the States, obviously.
Yes, it gets very confusing.
I'm dividing by 2 instead of 2.2, but it's close enough.
Okay,
but I mean, you're basically mashing it roughly twice the water to grain ratio. So you're using twice as much water per pound of grain or per kilogram of grain you're using a brew and bag method.
That's great.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that's the purpose of BIAB, is to go full volume. It gives you the single vessel. As soon as you decide to go for a lower liquid to grain ratio, then basically you're defeating the primary purpose of BIAB. You're going to have to add a hot liquor tank and or the mash tun. So really, BIAB is a single vessel brewing method. But mind you, we can blend, say, batch sparging and BIAB, and a lot of people do this. There might be people who brew on their stovetop and they use a bag to mash in, but they add an extra little pot on their stovetop and basically mash at the traditional liquor to grain ratio, and then might do some sort of sparging process. And that's really a method of batch sparging. It's not really BIAB in its pure form, but certainly I think BIAB can has a few advantages for traditional brewers and vice versa. In fact, we often see now some traditional brewers are using a bag in their mash tun, and that acts as a very good manifold.
So once you're done mashing, you basically you skip the traditional sparging process, which might take 20, 30 minutes, and you basically just lift the grain bag right out of the boiler, right?
That's right. So you can lift it up. You can either do it by hand. It's not really difficult because grain absorbs less liquor in BIAB, more liquor's drained out. Mm-hmm. So you can do it by hand, or you can use a pulley setup and just let the bag hang over the kettle while the wort comes to the boil. So it's quite an easy process.
Now, some critics say that would hurt your overall sugar extraction, that you get less sugar extracted from the grains because you're just pulling this bag out instead of sparging it over 20 or 30 minutes. Do you want to address that issue? I know we've had some discussions on that in the past.
Oh yeah, I think what happens is people confuse BIAB with no sparge brewing, and it's actually not no sparge brewing. No sparge brewing is a totally different process where there is we basically mash it with half the liquor, and then the remaining 50% of the liquor never actually touches the grain. And that's a great brewing method. They say it produces malty, rich beers, mm-hmm. but suffers from very low efficiency because it has no sparge. Biab actually has a sparge, but we might call it a passive sparge rather than an active sparge. The sparge is actually happening throughout the entire mash because we have that all that liquor in contact with the grain.
Right. So, yeah, because I think that's a key point, because you have that liquor in touch with the grain that whole time. It makes a big difference in terms of the extraction rate that you would get. So, you know, if I took like a batch sparging, for example, where I start with a traditional mash, and I start adding a whole bunch of water at the end relatively quickly, right, and drain that through the mash tun, I'm going to get a little bit lower extraction rate than I would using a traditional fly sparge, right? But in your case, what you're doing is, because you're that entire boil volume is in contact with the grain the entire time.
That's right.
You actually get a pretty good extraction rate using Biab methods, right?
We were actually really worried about this when we were talking about the idea originally. And I was looking back the other day, and I actually saw that the first two Biabs had a mash efficiency of 81%, and that 81% is very close to the average that Biab brewers get. On the figures I've collected, it's actually 80.4% is the average figure. And in hindsight, we actually shouldn't be surprised by it. People like Briggs, you know, respected brewing scientists, saying that a thin mash actually produces a very efficient wort, and that there's no effect on attenuation. And it makes sense to me now. It took a long time for me to actually understand why Biab would be so efficient. And I think there's several reasons for it. I think obviously there's no mash tun dead space. We actually have a very, very efficient manifold because it's got such a large surface area. And the porosity is very fine, mm-hmm. we actually do get a lot of wort draining out of the bag. And so instead of one part of grain holding, I'm not too sure what the right measurements are, but here it'd be 1 kilo of grain would absorb 1 liter of liquor, whereas with Biab, we have 1 kilo of grain absorbs 0.6 liters of water.
So about 40% less water ends up in the grain at the end, right?
That's right. And also what we have, in batch sparging, obviously we can't get the entire volume of water up to mash out temperatures. It's very hard to hit mash out temperatures with batch sparging. Whereas with Biab, if we mash out, we can actually have the entire volume of liquor reaching that 76, 78 degrees. So we're getting that extra extra heat over the full volume liquor, which I think that's another key point as well. That probably affects things by about 3%.
Interesting. So are there any risks mashing at this high water to grain ratio, which is probably another thing that a lot of people would be concerned about if you're using, in this case, three or four quarts per pound of grain, or in your case, six to eight liters per kilogram of grain, if I do the math right.
That's pretty close.
I mean, don't you run a risk maybe the beer is going to come out astringent, or there's going to be some off flavors or something like that? What do you say to that?
Yeah, these issues we also were worried about in the beginning, and I think biobrewers have been pretty careful to sort of check everything, experiment with things, and try and get as much accurate information as we can. And 5 years down the track, I think we're moving into pretty safe territory. You probably noticed yourself that in where Biab has been tasted against traditional beers, that there is very rarely any sort of difference noticed in the final result. On triangular testing, very few people can pick any difference in the beers. And when they do, the difference they note is more often than not a positive one. So I suspect that as we get more information, we're actually going to find that Biab is actually a very sensible way to brew, because we're probably getting a nice balance between good efficiency and not extracting tannins, etc., from the wort. Whereas, you know, we have that danger if we're fly sparging, there's a danger of extracting tannins out of the wort. And with batch sparging, we're sort of not quite getting as much as we'd like to. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I suspect that's what we might find down the track.
One of the points I would make, and I think I I've discussed this with you earlier, but a lot of traditional decoction mashes were actually done at very high water to grain ratios, you know, in the same range that you're operating, basically. And so a lot of the German beers, which are obviously excellent beers, were traditionally made with this very high water to grain ratios in the mash. And so I think, you know, I really do think that you're correct, that you really shouldn't see any off flavors here, because you don't see any of them in the other beers as well. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that was a very interesting bit of information, Matt.
Yeah.
I don't know how you find all this stuff. As I said, you do a lot of
reading. Now, what do you do differently when you're formulating a BIAB recipe versus a conventional recipe? What do you actually have to change inside the recipe?
I would say actually nothing, apart from the fact that you're probably adding your mashing and sparge liquor volume. So if you use Beersmith, what you would do is you'd look at how much the mash volume Beersmith tells you to add, plus the sparging volume, add all that together. So that's one thing you'd do.
Yeah.
But basically there's no difference between BIAB and all-grain brewing. The same as if you give me a recipe, I'll adjust it to my equipment, I'll adjust it for my evaporation, et cetera. And as long as I know your original gravity and the boil volume, then that's all the information I really need.
I know we got a little technical today, but you know, in simple terms, what are some of the advantages of BIAB versus traditional all grain brewing? I mean, really, I like the simplicity of the system. You've got a boiler, and you got a grain bag, and that's about it. That's about all the equipment you need, right, to get started brewing.
Yeah.
With all grain. I mean, that's pretty fantastic. But what are some of the other advantages that you see with BIAB?
Oh, well, I actually see a tremendous amount of advantage. And one thing I've tried to do over the last 5 years is actually look for disadvantages. And in the early days, sort of, could be a disadvantage. But over time, these things have been proved wrong. So if I have to give an honest answer these days, I actually can't find any real disadvantages to BIAB. I mean, it's a lovely, simple way to brew.
It's obviously cheaper,
it's easy,
right?
It's cheap because we need one vessel rather than three. It's a simple method to learn. We don't have as much terminology, so it's easy for new brewers to pick it up. We can do step mashing. We can do decoction mashing. Of course, you need a second vessel for that. But so it's very flexible. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take up much space, which, of course, if you're an apartment brewer, that's an advantage. And yeah, I really can't see any disadvantages. It's just all seems to be quite a sensible way to brew.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting technique. I wish I'd known about it when I was learning all grain. I think it's a great way to get into all grain sort of on the cheap and get started in it and find out if you enjoy it.
It's funny, we've actually got quite a few traditional brewers actually starting to buy it now, and they love it. So that's quite interesting as well.
Yeah, I find as I get older, I get a little bit lazier. <that's> just I'm not quite.
Yes, I know the feeling.
Well, the good part of that is I'm not as obsessed about things as I was perhaps when I, you know, at one point in my brewing lifetime, I guess I got really focused on, you know, you got to get this perfect, and now I tend to walk out in the garage and kind of go, well, what do I got laying around here? And I'll pull some of that, and we'll mix it together and see what happens. But
yes, that's very interesting. That
it's always different. So where can somebody go to learn more about BIAB? I know you run a website that you set up.
Oh yes, we've got biabbrewer.info, and that's something that many of us have worked on. Is for probably several thousand man hours went into setting up the structure. But what we're aiming for there is to provide very accurate information, but also a good forum culture. And it's a pretty interesting place, actually. We have brewers from all parts of the world and brewing, some of them brewing in the snow, some of them brewing like here in 40 degrees Celsius temperatures. But we have quite a few guides on the forum there. And some of the early pioneers are very active on the forum, and there's certainly no problems in getting your questions answered there in quite some detail. So I think that's quite a safe place to go to for information. We certainly go to great lengths to make sure the information there is of high quality.
Another site I know that had a lot of the original information was the Aussie Homebrewer site. Can you mention that website real quick? I don't recall off the top of my head.
Aussie Homebrewer.com.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yep, that's the major brewing forum here in Australia. And you'll find all the original BIAB threads on that forum, and they can make for some interesting reading, though. Several thousands posts, though, unfortunately.
Can you share with us a brewing tip before we get off the discussion here? Maybe not related to BIAB, but have you got a thought on something you can share for homebrewers out there?
I think it goes back to what you were talking about a moment ago about being less fastidious. I think simplicity is actually a real key to brewing, and I'm actually, believe it or not, a closet gadget man. I have a room over here full of equipment and parts and bits and pieces from failed brewing experiments, which I really enjoy, but basically none of them worked. And because what I was trying to do is make something more complex. And I think even simple things such as adding a tap to a kettle, you need to think twice before you go and do these things, because adding things often mightn't give you a better brew. And not only goes for equipment, but also with information. I remember in my early days of all grain brewing, I read way too much. And instead of just brewing, because brewing a good beer is really simple.
Yeah, it took me a long time to even understand what was going on. I think at the time I only had Charlie Papazian's book and maybe one or two other books, and their explanation of what the alpha, alpha and beta and all this other stuff. I was quite dazed by it for quite a while, but
yes, same here.
But eventually I figured it out, and then later on, you find out, well, really all you need to do is put some hot water and grains in a vessel and let them sit there for an hour and you're good to go. But I wish kind of early on that somebody had written that book.
It's a lot easier these days.
Well, I'm happy to see the transition, though. I mean, we've seen almost a total flip-flop from when I started. About when I started, probably 70 or 80% of the brewers were doing extract, and now I would say probably 70 or 80% of the brewers are doing all grain. And I think that's a great step forward and a testament to all the things here. But it was interesting. I had Glenn Tinseth on last episode, actually, and
that's right.
Glenn Tinseth was on and discussed how one of the problems is that a lot of the information, especially as the internet became popular in the mid-90s, a lot of the information was posted by engineers. And like good engineers, we all tried to dissect everything, perhaps went a little too far. And Glenn's point was, there's a little bit of art that goes into this too. It's not just purely running the numbers. I mean, you want to kind of run the numbers and see if you're in the ballpark, but at the same time, there's a little bit more to brewing than just trying to get your equation down to three significant digits or something like that. So it's kind of interesting.
Yes, we have the an American head brewer here at Little Creatures Brewery, which I'm not too sure you've heard of that, but he's a lovely bloke, very passionate about his brewing, and he says with his hop bitterness calculation, he said, you've just got to get to know a hop. You just have to learn about each hop and then know how to treat it. And that was very interesting hearing that from him.
Well, Pat, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here. It was just a great experience having you here.
Oh, lovely to meet you and see your face at last, Brad.
thank you for getting up so early as well. I think it's 7 a.m. there in Perth, Australia, right?
I'm always up pretty early.
So that was Patrick Hollingdale from buyabrewer.info, and I'm going to spell that out just so you can get it right. It's BIABrewer.info. Thank you, Patrick. Well, I'd like to thank everybody on our audience for listening today. I really appreciate you supporting the show. If you have any feedback for the show, you can leave it at beersmith.com/forum on the discussion forum under podcasting. Or you can leave it under this episode at the Beersmith blog at beersmith.com/blog. I'd like to thank you once again, and I hope you have a great brewing week.